Hello and welcome to Crick Visit the World Cup. This is the first two preview spaces we'll be doing before the tournament gets up and running in Ahmedabad on Thursday. During the tournament, we'll be reconvening sporadically to do some more of these, so keep an eye on the Crick Visit analyst account for when they will be. We will also be recording them and releasing them as podcasts, so don't worry if you miss them live. They should appear wherever you get your podcasts on the old Crick Visit podcast feed shortly after we're done. So today we're going to be discussing five of the 10 team squads, looking at their strengths and weaknesses and picking out some key things ahead of the tournament before doing it all again tomorrow with the remaining five teams. I'm Patrick Noon, and joining me here in Ahmedabad is Ben Jones, our head of insight. And from London, we have James Norton Brown, our head data scientist. Good afternoon, gents. How are we doing?
Very good, thank you.
Awesome. Well, first up, let's pick out a couple of key themes to look for during the competition. So, James, what stands out for you?
Yeah, so I think the key theme of sort of ODIs in this whole cycle has been the rise of new ball bowling. So we're seeing bowling strike rate, so that's balls per wicket, under 40 in the power play for the first time in this cycle. And sort of 2022, 2023. I think 2020 as well are sort of the three best new ball like periods or years ever. The swing with these new batch of Kookaburras that everyone talks about is the highest on record. So I think having a potent new ball bowler will be crucial. And then having sort of opening batters with red ball techniques or red ball fundamentals will be key to sort of withstanding those early new ball spells. Because we know in ODI cricket that a wicket early on is worth about 20 runs. So any wickets you get early on are so much more valuable than wickets you get in a power play. They're more valuable than wickets you get in the middle overs. So the ability to withstand those runs and then set up your batting to score those high totals in the middle and late overs is going to be absolutely crucial. Obviously, we've seen teams go out and attack the power play, and I think we will still see that. But I think we're going to see quite a high volatility of scores in the power play, which is then going to lead to a very high volatility of scores in the aggregate as well. So I think it's going to be really crucial. I think those first 10 overs are going to be crucial to almost every game. And I think as you go through the teams, you can sort of see most teams have a very threatening new ball bowler and a very threatening new ball option that teams are really going to have to prepare against and hope they can survive.
Nice, yeah. That'll be interesting to see. I think, a lot's going to depend on how teams set up with the bat early on to counter all that, as you say. Ben, what about you? What stands out for you?
I think one of the really interesting trends we've seen in ODI cricket for the last 4 years is the move towards more spin. We've seen more spin bowled in this cycle than any other World Cup cycle previously. And what's also been interesting is that that spin hasn't done particularly any better or worse than before. It's kind of stayed pretty stable. And so it's not like teams are playing on raggers and suddenly just picking turners. They're trying to move towards a team for this World Cup because there's that cliche of, Asian conditions, Indian conditions. And whilst that is obviously more true than, going for an ODI at Durham in April or whatever, there is such a variety of conditions in Indian cricket. You're probably more varied here than anywhere else in the world in terms of what you can get at one end of the spectrum in terms of being pace friendly and, in Mumbai or in Dharamshala, but then places like Chennai or Lucknow where you're seeing a huge amount of spin and how teams adapt to that across the course of a big tournament. It's one of the advantages of the 10 team, round robin structure is that it kind of tests every element of your game against everyone. And so there are the importance of seam all rounders in particular, allowing teams to pick 4-2 or 4-3 balances, i.e. four quicks and three spinners in some respects. That is massive because it means that you don't necessarily have to shift in and out of your first choice 11. You don't have to be chopping and changing from game to game. And there are a couple of teams that have got that, and there are a couple of teams that haven't. And it's going to be fascinating when you look at the teams that haven't, teams like South Africa in particular, but also India, if Hardik isn't fit. It's going to be really interesting to see how they adapt to those particular challenges.
Nice, yeah. Cool. So now we're going to go through five of the 10 teams. We're going to do 6 minutes chat on each. So we're going to start with Australia. Now, Ben, you flagged up that you're quite interested in the way that they've picked their squad, that they haven't, as has been the case sometimes in the past with Australia, they just sort of asked the test team to go and just bat a bit quicker and just relied on the fact that they've got good cricketers. This time they've gone a bit more specialised and curated for this tournament, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's part of the kind of the Australian era of dominance in ODI cricket. 1990 to 2007 was parallel to their dominance in Test cricket, obviously. And a lot of the same players were involved in both teams, there was this sense of just like, we are just better at cricket than you. So we're not going to worry about bits and pieces all rounders. And, you know, as England and New Zealand were often looking at in that era, they were just, we're just going to pick six really good batters, four really good bowlers, and maybe an all rounder, but that's not necessarily what we're starting with. Whereas this time, Australia have looked to bring in so many all rounders, and there's such insane batting depth in their team. You know, you've got Stoinis, you've got Marsh, you've got Maxwell, you've got Green, you've got guys like Cummins, whose batting is fantastic, but he's almost not considered an all-rounder in this side because there's so many options. What that should allow them to do, if they do choose to go down this route, is bat incredibly deeply. Now, I know that James has got some thoughts on which way around they want to construct their side, whether it's with an extra bowler at number eight or an extra batter. And I think when Travis Head is around, when he's back from his injury, we will see them move quite definitively towards that batting deep option. We've seen them really go for that in the last 18 months or so with their planning and their prep. But it's interesting just because it's such a break from Australian traditional cricketing kind of values, if that's not too grandiose a term.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I think like we've seen them try and play Cam Green as low as number nine so they can try and get all those sort of seam bowling all-rounders in. James, do you think that's the right way to go? Do you have any thoughts around that?
I think it's fascinating. I think they're almost good enough. They can sort of skin the cat both ways. They can either try to win it with their batting and bat Green, probably at eight, and then sort of try to get 20 overs from Maxwell, Marsh, Stoinis and Green, which I think, you know, that's absolutely fine. Or they can, you know, bat Green at seven, Cummins, Stark, Zampa, Hazelwood. I don't think they've set their squad up in a way where that's going to be their default option, just because they only have three like frontline seamers. So I don't think they'd have picked another frontline seamer like a Spencer Johnson if their plan was to play Cummins at eight regularly. So I think they should have their squad in a way where I think they're going to pick Green at eight. But the beauty of their team and the beauty of their construction is even if they do that, they're still going to have three absolutely elite bowlers. And the threat with Australia is if they have Green at eight and they have that incredible batting depth, you are going to need to go very hard at Stoinis, very hard at Green, very hard at Maxwell. And you're going to need to get, you know, seven or eight and over off that 20 overs, because that team is going to score heavily and it's going to score well. And what they're probably going to do is they're going to give Stoinis the new ball, which they've liked to do recently in South Africa. And they're probably going to try to challenge you to take on it when he's bowling at 80 miles an hour and swinging it, which you can do, and it is doable, but it is high risk. And if you can't pull that off, then they're going to struggle to chase down the score that Australia are going to set. Obviously, if they pick Cummins, Stark, Hazelwood, then their bowling attack is brilliant. They still bat pretty deep. Mitchell Stark's a brilliant number nine. And I think if they make the knockouts, that's probably what they will do. I imagine their finals team is Green at eight. Cummins at eight. But I think throughout the tournament, we'll see them go a bit more batting heavy to sort of survive that. Just the slog that this tournament's going to take on fast bowlers.
Yeah, and I think that's backed up by the fact that obviously the late change they had to make when Agar was injured, rather than doing a like-for-like split, they brought in another batter in Labuschagne. Ben, do you think that obviously now they can only, at most, they can play a 4-2 split with seamers and spinners? How do you think that's going to go?
Yeah, obviously the Head was more of the headline injury, but Agar, yeah, it's forced them into a genuine change of structure. You know, Australia are probably going to bowl less spin in this tournament than anyone else. You know, they've gone really big with the idea that obviously Adam Zampa is their frontline specialist, leggy, but then they've gone really big PR-wise in terms of the build-up, saying that they consider Maxwell to be a specialist spinner. Now, that is fair. He's a very good white ball operator, but he's played, I think, 11 ODIs in India, and he averages 58 with the ball and he goes at just under a runner ball. Granted, most of that has been against India and their famously right-handed batting. And so he's never in necessarily the best situation, but it's going to be a big ask for him against most sides in the tournament, maybe not New Zealand and England, who are slightly more left-hand dominant, but against most teams, him getting through six, seven, eight economical overs is going to be a really crucial element of Australia's planning. Because if in the same way that James said, you can, instead of just taking down the fourth and fifth seamers, if teams can reliably take down Maxwell, then that's a real route out of the conundrum that Australia's side does present. I think Zampa's in a really interesting spot. He's very clearly the number one. He's literally the only one in the squad as a specialist spinner. He has had some fantastic results in ODI cricket recently, but he's also just come off the back of being absolutely pelted around Centurion by Henrik Claassen and David Miller. He's a resilient enough character to know that most spinners get whacked around Centurion and South Africa in general, and Claassen and Miller are two of the greats at the moment in terms of in-form white ball players. But it's interesting if he can kind of get over that setback and get back on the horse and really go back to being a really crucial part of Australia's World Cup planning.
Yeah, nice. Okay, so prediction time. James, how do you think they'll get on, Australia?
I'd be surprised if they don't make the semi-finals. They're a very strong side. They've obviously got quite a tough start with India and South Africa first up, but I think they'll split those games and they'll go on to make the semi-final, where they'll probably lose to one of the better sides.
And Ben?
I agree. I've got them coming third. I think they'll struggle to break into that top two purely because of the spin issues, because in certain conditions they're gonna find it really tough. But I think they'll make it through and then lose in the semi.
Nice. Yeah, I tend to agree. I think they look strong. I think I can see them finishing top of the group phase and then going out in the semi. But yeah, they'll be dangerous. Cool. Next up, we have New Zealand. Now, Ben, this has been an interesting build-up for them. We're not quite sure what team they're going to go with. They've tried a few things in the warm-ups, but that's not for the first time going into tournament that they've been sort of tinkering with stuff. So yeah, have you got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think they're kind of the more interesting side to discuss from a selection basis, because A, they've got so many all-rounders that a variety of different balances are available to them. They've got different kinds of all-rounders, a bit more spin than Australia. They've got, you know, Rachin Ravindra, they've got Mark Chapman and Mitchell Santner, plus Neesham and Mitchell as the seam all-rounders. And nobody is quite sure which team they're going to pick. You even got the uncertainty around Kane Williamson, who obviously was ruled out of the tournament 8 months ago, is now back in the squad, told he's not going to play on Thursday against England in Ahmedabad, but you never quite know. And we were chatting earlier, Patton, you made the salient point that ahead of 2021 in the T20 World Cup in the UAE, everyone was talking about a particular New Zealand lineup, and then on the morning of, or the afternoon of the game, Daryl Mitchell strolls out and opens the batting and does very well and obviously plays some very memorable knocks as New Zealand get to the final. Now, I think that kind of speaks to the flexibility of this group of players. They're not necessarily outstanding individually in terms of their quality, but used in the right role in different flexible positions, there's a real opportunity for New Zealand to focus on their star players, who obviously, as I'm sure James is about to eulogise, Trent Bolt, and to an extent, Lachie Ferguson, and if he's fit, Kane Williamson, and then blend the rest of these role players around to really emphasise the quality of the stars.
Yeah, Bolt's crucial, I think, in particular, isn't he, James? I think you've got some good numbers on just how important he's going to be in this.
Yeah, I mean, to put quite simply, according to our projections and our player rankings, Trent Bolt's the best player in the world in ODI cricket. He averages 13 with a new ball since the last World Cup. He's just absolutely phenomenal in that phase. We've sort of talked about how important that phase is, how valuable wickets in that phase are. He is the best in the world at taking wickets in that phase. And, you know, he will win them a game. He'll probably win them two, almost single-handedly. So, their chances in this World Cup basically come down to who that game's against. You know, if he happens to win them that game against Bangladesh, that's not going to be that valuable for them. But if he happens to have a day and turns out against Australia, then, you know, that could propel them forward. He is absolutely phenomenal. Obviously, Kane Williamson, when fit, is a great batter as well. You've got Phillips, who you know, hasn't done loads on the ODI stage, but has very good and should be very susceptible to these conditions. They're a very, very solid side, and also very well prepared for this World Cup, weirdly, unlike a lot of other sides from outside of Asia. They've played 14 ODI games in Asia this year, in 2023. So we can talk about some teams who've been pretty underprepared for this World Cup, who haven't played many games in Asia, who might not be familiar with conditions. Obviously, players like Bolt, you know, haven't played those games with their regular IPL performance. The people who don't play in the IPL have played a lot of games in these conditions. They're very familiar with them. They'll be looking to get off to a very quick start in this World Cup, while other teams sort of get up to speed with conditions. I think they're a real threat, and I think they could be very difficult to play. They're just very solid. It's sort of classic New Zealand side. They're very solid, and they've got a couple of match winners. They're a pretty tough out, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point around how prepared they are. Obviously, they just had a series in England as well, which, you know, playing against top quality opposition going into it prepares, and they look good in the warm-ups. They've passed 300 on both the games they played so far. They beat Pakistan and South Africa, who teams you probably expect to be at a kind of similar level to them, perhaps, fighting for those sort of last qualification places. So yeah, I think they've got a lot of flexibility, a lot of quality. It's just whether they can kind of knit that all together. Ben, do you have anything to add before we do predictions for New Zealand?
Yeah, there's just one extra thing. I think part of the benefit that they have with this really varied group of players, who, like I said, maybe lacking individual quality, but they've got all bases covered. They've got high pace, they've got swing, they've got seam bowling from Henry. You know, they've got left and right, different kind of spin matchups, is that they're really difficult to plan for. It's really difficult for teams to genuinely work out, this is our absolute route to victory against New Zealand. And there's a couple of little tricksy ones, and this is, you know, slightly tongue-in-cheek in terms of being very niche. But if we talk about matchups so much these days, and if you don't do your planning properly, then you probably, you know, you clock off early and say, just bowl off spin to the left-handers, then against New Zealand, you're going to get cooked, because Neesham and Conway, despite being lefties, both absolutely nail off spin. And I think Chapman's record against it is decent as well. So those kind of simple planning ideas aren't necessarily going to work against New Zealand. They're going to make the tactics guys work. The coaches and the analysts are really going to have to get their teeth into New Zealand, which I think is maybe quite a benefit for England and Pakistan, who've played them a lot recently, because they've got a bit more of a sense of the individual strengths and weaknesses of the guys that are above, or sorry, below the kind of headline ideas.
Yeah, so the only thing I'd sort of come back on there is high pace. They are relatively susceptible to high pace down the lineup. The only person who's really got a great record against high pace in ODI cricket is Will Young, who might not even play. Like Ravindra might start in the opening spot. You know, not loads of teams have expressed high pace, but teams that do, someone like Mark Wood in that first game should be really looking to target. He should be a key player. But yeah, I agree. Apart from that, there's not many weaknesses through the lineup.
Okay, and prediction, Ben?
I've got them coming sixth. I could see them competing and then falling away, but I can't see them making the semis. There's just not quite enough quality.
And James?
I could see them making the semis, but I think they're going to come fifth. I think their schedule's a bit against them. They play Bangladesh and Afghanistan in Chennai. I think they probably drop one of them. That proves to be costly. But they're very good.
Yeah, I've got them sixth as well. I think, yeah, they'll be competitive, but just fall short. Okay, on to the defending champions, England. Obviously, a slightly mixed build-up with rain in their warm-up games and so on. Overall, James, are they as good as they are in 2019?
No, but I don't think anyone's as good as England were in 2019. I think the 2019 side would be favourite for this World Cup. So I think it's probably quite a harsh standard to hold them to. They're still exceptional. Their batting unit is brilliant. You know, they've sort of replaced everyone with pretty like-for-like players. I think they'll obviously miss the quality of Morgan, but Livingston gives them a bit of an extra edge, and his performance in India is pretty exceptional. Their first choice bowling attack is brilliant. Like Wokes, Wood, Rash, all just excellent players. Also, I think what's interesting is how they lined up for this World Cup in a slightly different way to 2019. So obviously 2019, Dawson was in the squad, and this year he's not, which is slightly counterintuitive, because obviously that one was in England and this one's in India. So I think it's quite an interesting setup that they've put an extra seamer for this World Cup. But I think it shows how they're really considering this to be a whole, like a marathon, this tournament. I think they're one of the better teams set up to survive the slog of how big India is and how much travel there is. Got a lot of seamers to rotate through. The sort of base quality of those seamers is pretty high. I think the drop off from Wood and Wokes is big, but not as big as some of the other teams. And that level is, you know, the level of sort of your Willie Curran, Topley is higher than, you know, South Africa's backup seamers, for example. So I think they should survive this tournament. They should grow into this tournament, I think, as the game goes on. As the competition goes on, I think that suits them, because the schedule is pretty backloaded for them. Like the first game against New Zealand is huge. If they can get through that, win that, they sort of set themselves up to be able to rotate the players they want to rotate and grow into the tournament as it goes on. I think the concern is that they're a bit undercooked, but I think the other way to view that is that they're rested. So I think they're a very good side. I think they'll grow into the competition. It's a long slog, and I think they've picked a squad that's very well suited for that.
Yeah, agreed. I think that is a slight concern, being that, yeah, how undercooked they are. Looking at some of the numbers around that, like games that they played in Asia, Root, for example, hasn't played an ODI in Asia since 2018. So Ben, do you think that'll be an issue?
I think it can't be a good thing. I think a player of Joe Root's caliber is a guy who can come back from that kind of stint. You know, he's been in good form in other formats, and I think he probably just needs some games to grow into it. And like James said, the schedule being so backloaded for England probably works in their favour, particularly for guys like Root, who, if they can stumble together any kind of form, will just face deliveries by virtue of batting at the top of the order. And I think that kind of that keeps things a little bit more optimistic for England. But just to be a little bit more negative, because I'm going to counter some of James's positivity, is I think some of England's like underriding brilliance from 15 to 19 was about a couple of very particular metrics. One was this idea of belting the ball into the screens and stopping the ball swinging and going really, really hard in those first 10 overs. And one of them was the fact that they absolutely blitzed leg spin through the middle at a time when people were talking about leg spin being the most crucial threat in ODI cricket through overs 11 to 40. England's average against leg spin, particularly in the last 4 years, has been just 22. In the 4 years prior, 15 to 19, it was 60, and at a very, very healthy rate. And if you look at England's power play one scoring rates, against that new ball, since we've started to see this swing, this seam with this particular batch of kookaburras, it has also dropped off a little bit. And I think there's a concern that maybe England's just kind of utter grooved, machine-like dominance and just smashing out 350. Some of the things that underpinned that maybe aren't quite where they were 4 years ago. That's not to say the players can't recover that form. There's obviously been lots of issues in terms of COVID interruptions and people being rested and all this kind of stuff. And some players have even retired and not been involved at all. But I think it might take a little while for England to get back to their absolute best in those two key metrics.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I think, James, I don't know, do you think that you mentioned how good some of the bowling attack is, but do you think there could be a slight reliance on Adil Rashid for him to perform well, for England to do well?
Yeah, absolutely. They've got no cover spin in the squad. They don't really have another right to left spin option at all, which, you know, given India are obviously very good against right to left spin, but you do want a leg spin or a slow left armer against them and against, you know, lots of other sides like in the World Cup. I think he's obviously had a bit of injury problems. He's not in the sort of form he has been in the past. He's still a brilliant spinner, and I think there's still some faith he'll turn up in this competition, but I think they are very reliant on him and he's not always the fittest. So I think that's a big concern. And same thing with Mark Wood as well. But as I said, I think that if they get off to a good start, they can probably rest a couple of them through the middle of the tournament. But if they don't, the alternative is they don't do that. And then all of a sudden they have, you know, three knockout games in the last four games, which will be very difficult.
Just one thing, again, on the fitness, is quite interesting. It feels like England are quite used to dealing with injuries, but they've been pretty lucky in the build-up to this World Cup. You know, you look at the injured 11 across all the teams and it's a damn good side. You know, England have got Archer as their main injury and he is still a travelling reserve. You know, he's a guy that they're managing back to fitness. So far, England haven't lost too many genuine squad contenders, let alone starting contenders. You're looking at guys like Saqib Mahmood and Ollie Stone to kind of fulfil that role. So, fingers crossed, that means that it's down to excellent physio work off the field and that England's good luck with injuries can be sustained. But if not, you worry that Lady Luck might deliver them a bit of a blow halfway through the tournament, just on the balance of probability.
Yeah, fair enough. Predictions then, James, what do you reckon?
Again, I think this is another one of those teams that will be very disappointed not to make the semi-finals. I think they probably make the final, but I don't think they win the competition. I think it probably depends on Jofra. If he can come in fit, then I think they could probably win the whole thing. If not, I think they'll probably lose the final.
Yeah, inclined to agree. Ben, any thoughts?
Yeah, I've got them coming second in the group stage and getting to the final, and I'm going to plead the fifth and not say who's going to win until the day before, because I think so much of it does depend on which quicks come through unscathed.
Fair enough. Okay, we go from one of the favourites to the rank outsiders, the Netherlands. Now, one of their main issues, I think, coming into this is just the sheer lack of cricket. They haven't played a competitive ODI since the 9th of July. Ben, is that going to hinder them even more than you might expect?
It's tough, isn't it? Yeah, with their warm-ups being rained out as well, those would have been really crucial opportunities for them to get some minutes. And it does feel a little bit like they're arriving at the World Cup as more of an unknown quantity than you'd think. Obviously, much is made about, you know, associate cricket and World Cup qualified cricket actually being much more intense than traditional bilaterals. There's so much riding on it. And so those games against Scotland in the semi-final and the kind of progression, all the ball that was lying on that, and Delaney's knock and his fifer in that incredible game that drags them to the World Cup. That's more tense than any cricket in ODIs that any other player or any other team at this World Cup has played in the last 4 years. So to an extent, they're used to the real rigour of it. But in terms of just banging out matches, they've only played 30-odd games since 2019. And you do worry about how they're going to cope, like James mentioned earlier, about the intensity of travelling around. They haven't got necessarily players with perfect fitness records. And so not so much even form, it's about keeping guys fit and on the park. You do worry about them in that respect. But equally, they've got a lot of experience and, good, solid operators who hopefully can kind of keep a level head through it and manage them through it.
Yeah, and like looking through the squad, I think the bowling looks more threatening than the batting, I think. Guys like Van Meekeren and Delaney, as you mentioned, I think there could be a handful. James, looking at their sort of squad spread, it seems like there are a lot of players at a kind of similar level. They don't really have like standout stars, but there's also not many passengers either.
Yeah, absolutely. It's probably why they're one of the better associates in ODI cricket and not necessarily that way in T20 cricket. ODI cricket is probably slightly more of a team game, a couple more. They all have a very good T20 World Cup, but in general, they're a slightly more threatening ODI side because they've just got a high floor, low ceiling to a lot of their players. They don't have the match winners that some of the other associate nations have, which I think is going to be a real issue for them in this World Cup. They sort of lack elite talent, and then they probably also lack the ability to keep out elite talent when they bat. I think they'll really struggle, and I don't think the schedules help them much either. I think the two games they could have targeted are probably Afghanistan and Sri Lanka, and they play both of them in Lucknow, which is not your ideal place to play those two teams. Obviously, they've relayed the pitch in Lucknow, but I'd be surprised if it's not friendly for spin, I would say. That's pretty difficult. I think they're the games that are targeted. They've got Bangladesh and Calcutta, but Bangladesh have now got a brilliant seam attack. So I think they're gonna struggle to win a game. But it's just the lack of elite talent that's the issue. They don't have that one bowler, that one batter who can sort of win them a game, I would say. That's gonna be a struggle.
I think related to that is that I think James is right to raise it, is that sense of guys that can just on their day really outperform, their expected performance. I mean, it's mad really, given that one of the few things that people who follow cricket more casually will know about the Netherlands in recent times was Logan van Dijk against West Indies when he smashes 30 off the super over against Jason Holder. And it's kind of stands out as this like moment of power and aggression and excellence. But that's really not been the Netherlands game for 4 years. They don't really hit sixes, and they hit one in every 86 balls since the last World Cup, which is ranks ninth amongst all the teams at the World Cup, ahead of only Sri Lanka. Now, obviously, there's varying conditions there, and we don't want to kind of read too much into it, but it just kind of plays into James's sense of maybe there aren't guys who can play above themselves on any given day. They're relying on guys like Van Baker, more experienced in slightly higher level cricket, to really step up in those clutch moments.
Yeah, I agree. I think we've probably all agreed that they're going to struggle and most likely will be propping up the table. But do either of you think they can get a win on the board, James?
I don't. Unless that Lucknow pitch doesn't take any spin, I'd be surprised. The other game they play, I just don't think the schedule is very helpful in terms of trying to target a game to win, unfortunately.
Yeah, fair enough. Ben, can they spring a surprise, do you think?
I think they're more likely to be consistently quite competitive and not win a game than they are to win a game. And I think to an extent, that's a better demonstration of your skills and your quality rather than just necessarily springing a surprise and then getting rolled a few times. So fingers crossed they stay competitive, because it'd be a nice chance for some of those guys at the end of their career to kind of, get a bit of a moment in the sun.
Yeah, that was sort of shades of Afghanistan in the last World Cup, I guess. Well, decent, but couldn't get over the line. Anyway, last team for today, we were going to talk about South Africa. Big news in their build-up was Anrik Nortje getting injured, missing the tournament. James, you've got concerns, not just because of that, but also around the rest of their bowling attack.
Yeah, everyone, when you look at South Africa, everyone sort of looks at the batting, and it is brilliant when it goes well. I'm quite concerned on the bowling. They have the worst bowling average in the power play. Their squad, the players in their squad, have the worst ODI bowling average in the power play of any team in the whole competition. Lungi Ngidi is their best power play bowler. I don't know if they'll use him in that phase. They obviously do a bit, but Jansen and Rabada will probably take the new ball. So I think that's a pretty big concern for them. We talked about the importance of new ball wickets and how important like Bolt is for New Zealand and Stark is for Australia and Wokes is for England, and how those all of those elite teams have that one bowler who you have to sort of survive early on. I just don't think South Africa have that person. And I think that's going to then cause the middle over bowlers to struggle, particularly without Onokia, who gave them that strike taking bowler through the middle. And they'll probably pick Shamsi or Kutsia to try to give them that option. But I think they're going to struggle to take wickets through the early overs and the middle overs. I think that's going to really cause difficulty for them to restrict teams. Batting can obviously chase almost anything, but I think they're going to really struggle to restrict teams to under 250, 300 in every single game. I think that's going to be very difficult.
Yeah, I can see what you mean. I think as well, there's also a slight issue with the balance of their team. I think their sort of first choice all rounder is going to be Jansen, who you think is going to bat at seven, but Ben, to me, that looks like that leaves them a little bit short.
Yeah, he's kind of neither one thing nor the other. When he gets going, Jansen looks like one of the few guys who could maybe bowl 10 overs and be a really serious batter in the tournament. And he does clearly have remarkable raw materials, but he's not been given much of a chance to really grow into this role. And in the absence of some more experienced options like Wayne Parnell and the absence of Nokia just in terms of quality, there's an awful lot being asked of him. And I think there's no replacement for him even on the bench. Petla Kwayo is a canny operator, but he's neither a 10-over bowler nor a top-six batter. And so South Africa are desperate for him to A, stay fit, B, stay quality, and really kind of perform a role that he's not necessarily done that well so far in his ODI career. He's obviously got a huge amount of talent, but he's not proven it yet. It's a really big role within the context of the squad. And also just on that, there's some interesting squad decisions that South Africa have made. They haven't really got a replacement for the middle order batters of Klaassen, Markram or David Miller. They've opted for Reeza Hendricks on the bench as the only specialist batter. So if Klaassen, Miller or Markram do roll an ankle on the morning of a game or fall ill, they're either going to have to radically reshuffle the batting and bring Reeza into a really unusual role or genuinely really move players out of position or end up with Jansen and Petla Kwayo at 6-7, which is no one's idea of World Cup batting depth. So I think they've made some interesting calls. Someone like Tristan Stubbs may have given them a bit more reserve in that area while still giving them a genuine off-spin option as well, although that is covered with Markram. So I just think there's a few questions around the selection of the squad. But because of that, the team pretty much picks itself.
Yeah, I mean, that batting, as you say, it looks, if everyone's firing, it looks pretty formidable. But they do have a bit of an issue against high pace, surprisingly, don't they, James, for a South African team?
Yeah, absolutely. De Kock and David Miller have pretty good records. So, De Kock lasting long is going to be crucial for them. And because Bavuma, van der Dus and Markram all have pretty poor records against high pace bowling. And they sort of bat in the middle overs. And I think that the trend of those high-paced bowlers operating through the middle, which South Africa sort of not started, but really embraced with Nokia, could come back to bite them, particularly as Nokia is no longer with them. I think that opening pair surviving the new ball, ensuring that Rassi, Markram and Klaassen face a lot of spin in the middle overs is going to be crucial. Klaassen's obviously probably the best player of spin in the world at the moment, absolutely on incredible form. He's the match winner. So trying to make sure that those guys, get into the right phases. We talked about this for South Africa in T20 cricket, but I think it also applies in ODI cricket. If you can get them out of their roles, if you can displace them from their optimal entry points, I think you can really get after this team because they don't bat particularly deep. And then you can get the high pace at them through the middle.
Fair enough. I think, I can see them. They'll obviously be in the mix for the semis. Ben, do you think they'll squeak through?
I do think they'll squeak through. It's partly out of loyalty to South African cricket at the moment, but I think they're probably the third best batting side in the World Cup in terms of their first choice top six. And, I couldn't get through the podcast without mentioning hitting against the spin. Booker wrote with Nathan Lehman, the England analyst, after the last World Cup. And one of his main findings was, looking about how to win World Cups, batting is more important than bowling. Bowling kind of the old bowling wins tournaments, batting wins matches. It's not really borne out in the data. And so I'm sticking loyal to the numbers and I'm saying that South Africa's batting strength will see them through. Although James will roast me about the high pace stuff.
Yeah, James, where have you got on finishing?
I've probably got to finish like sixth, maybe seventh. I think their batting is brilliant, and I think they could make me look very stupid, and they could score 350 every game. But I think they're very susceptible to an upset. I think if you can get after them early, I don't think they're batting on up. I think if you look at teams like Afghanistan and Sri Lanka, the way to beat them is to make sure you bowl them out for 200. And I don't think South Africa have the bowling run up to do that. I think they could easily slip up against those two teams, and then drop down the standings. That strong bowling lineup is really how you insulate yourself against those upsets. And I sort of think anyone could score 250 against this side.
Yeah, I've got them fifth. I think they'll just miss out. I think they'll probably they might batter a couple of teams, but I think they'll ultimately come short. Okay, well, that's about all we've got time for today. We'll be back tomorrow with the remaining five teams. Time is a bit TBC, but we will tweet before and let everyone know what time to join us. And yeah, hope to see you all then. Goodbye.